So I'd like to just kick off the first one, Flourishing in a Science Career, and we'll still have our panelists present in an order as before, but just in a more relaxed setting than there. So, Tom, do you have any additional announcements to make?
Yeah.
I guess not. So we'll have Johnny Lin, past ASA Council President and someone who works in atmospheric science and teaches at University of Washington, Bothell. And Otanye Braid-Moncur, who is at Gordon College and teaches chemistry and is really excited about mentoring, so we're very happy to have her here today. And Josiah Lewis, who's a postdoc at Washington University in St. Louis and has been advising InterVarsity on the STEAM grant process. So one of the other advisors is also here, Joshua Ho. So, Tom, anything further?
No, I think what we can do is have each of them share for a couple minutes, and then we'll take some questions.
Sounds great.
And then when that wraps up, we'll do the next one.
Great. Johnny, why don't you start us off?
Okay. So, hi, my name is Johnny Lin, and Hannah was saying, I'm currently at the University of Washington, Bothell, teaching in their computer science department. But my background is a little bit strange, and this kind of relates to some of the things I'll be talking about. So I did my bachelor's in mechanical engineering, and my master's was in civil engineering, both at Stanford. And then I went and did a PhD in atmospheric sciences over at UCLA, and did a postdoc in climate dynamics over at University of Colorado over in Boulder for a couple of years, and then another one at Chicago, University of Chicago. Then I took a position teaching physics at North Park University, which is a small Christian liberal arts college. Did that for 9 years, and then 3 years ago, I moved to the Seattle area, and so University of Washington Bothell is a branch campus in the University of Washington system that's only 20 minutes away from the main campus in Seattle. And and I'm now teaching computer science, so I'm a senior lecturer there, as well as having an affiliate appointment still at North Park. So I tell my students in the programming classes that I teach that I have taken a single programming class in my entire career, but it took me 15 years to learn how to program, and that that would hopefully not be, I say that not in a way to make people feel like, okay, programming is a really bad thing that will take you a long time, but merely to say that there's a whole lot of different routes you can take in terms of, working with computers, and that if you want to be a programmer, you want to do software development, and you have a bad first experience or a bad second experience, that's okay. It's not indicative of whatever is to come. Okay. With regards to the topic, flourishing as a scientist, I kind of wrote down, even though Hannah very, very kindly wrote suggestions of what you should, what would be a helpful thing, unfortunately, I came up with 12 things.
Yeah.
I realized this is a bit, that's bad. So, but I'll maybe skip a bunch of them in terms of as we go along and just kind of make sort of the highlights. The basic things I kind of wrote down were sort of two categories, what I would call life advice, and the second one, what I call career advice. And so I'll read a couple, and there's actually six of each. So the first one, in terms of life advice, I think one of the things that is really easy to do in careers in general, but I think especially for folks who are in grad school. How many folks here are in grad school, out of curiosity? Okay, most people. But I think it's very easy to become cynical or to become mildly, not depressed, that'd be a little strong, but to feel a little bit, kind of woe is me type of thing. And I think reminding oneself to be grateful for, so every day walking into the office and thanking God for the opportunity to study, for the opportunity to do the work that you're engaged in, even if it seems like you're knocking your head against the wall, for all the things that are related to it, to cultivate an attitude of gratitude, I think is a really, really useful thing. I think partly that's also helpful because I think science, like all good things, is very easy to become an idol. And C.S. Lewis in Screwtape Letters talks about how if you want to create a demon, you don't start out with a person, you start out with an angel. You have to corrupt something that is really, really good in order to get something really, really bad. And so science is a very, very good thing, but corrupted, it becomes a very, very bad thing, and an idol that can consume you and can can eat you up in terms of the ways that you approach things. And so to have to ground yourself with regards to, well, who's really the one that has given you this opportunity, given us all these opportunities to do the work that we do, I think that's a useful thing, at least for me, because I know for myself, it's really easy for me to kind of get sucked up into saying, okay, this is what success means. Whereas God's definition of what success means may be something entirely different. Maybe some overlap, but maybe entirely different too. So the second thing was to be deeply connected with communities. And I'm assuming that a number of you all are connected with a Graduate Christian Fellowship on your campus or with the InterVarsity or with a local church. And I just want to say, yeah, that's good. Okay, that's short. Third one, set aside a Sabbath. Last year, Deb Harsma shared, and I thought this was a really neat thing. She just doesn't refuses to check email, period, on Sundays. And, that's pretty cool for somebody who, in her position, to make that kind of commitment to take a rest and to take a break. My little way of doing that is I don't take work emails on Sunday, but I check personal emails. But however you do it, to set aside a Sabbath is actually a real, real benefit. A fourth one I would say is to look for ways to worship not only through your work, but also to worship in your work. One short story I know for myself, when I was in grad school, I had this really fun day in which I was sitting at the computer doing, writing code for the model work that I was doing. And for some reason, I suddenly found myself worshiping God through my coding. It was the most strange experience, and I've never had it again. But one of the things that was really helpful for me was to realize, hey, worshiping through song, worshiping through reading of the word, through prayer, but you can also worship through code and worship, obviously, through all the other activities that we do. Okay, so why don't I... and then maybe one last one in this category. And here, too, this is something I often forget, is in a science career, in just doing work, it's really easy to focus in terms of the work that's being done and to forget about one's coworkers as people who we are called to love. And I can think in particular of one particular circumstance in which somebody had shared something very, very, vulnerable with me, and for some reason, basically by habit, I did exactly what the Good Samaritan didn't do, right? Mm-hmm. All the non-Good Samaritans in Jesus' parable did, and, just kind of went on my way. And I look back on that with regret and realize, that kind of focusing on task and not breaking my schedule or breaking the sequence of events that I had planned to accomplish really had a negative effect. Okay, the second category. The first one, in grad school, I'm assuming most of you all already have your advisor, but if you don't have an advisor, I think that's the most important decision that you'll probably make in grad school, even more important than what school you go to, at least it's a close second. If you find an advisor whose management style fits with you, you will be happy. I had a wonderful, wonderful 6.5 years in my PhD program. My advisor, totally great guy, brilliant man, gave me exactly the support that I needed, as well as the freedom and space that I needed in the correct proportions, and gave me opportunities that other faculty wouldn't have let me do in terms of my career, because they were off the beaten path. When I asked him to allow me to be an adjunct faculty member at Biola University, because I wanted to get some experience teaching beyond a TAing position to actually run a course, and thus to cut my RA-ship in half, that was something he was willing to do, even though other faculty at my school at UCLA would not have allowed that to happen. And so that was great. I think we all know of, advisors where the mix is not so cool. I have one colleague in which she met her advisor every single day for afternoon, every single day. And another one who actually did the coding, basically the advisor and student would work in the coffee shop together and do the coding, like just sitting across the table from one another. Now, for those students, they all thrive. They worked. It worked with them in terms of management style. But for some other people, that kind of level of management doesn't work for them. On the other end of the spectrum, I had a friend who saw his advisor once every 3 months. And, you know, I would have died if I had done that, because I didn't have enough good ideas to be able to go on without my advisor. But that student loved it. He really wanted to be independent. So figuring that out, that management fit, is, I think, a huge thing. Very quickly, I would say practice writing. I think the older I get, the more I'm surprised at how important it is to write well. And if you have an opportunity to learn to write, you've got to learn to write. And you just got to take every opportunity. Just recently, I'm on a committee that's been working on drafting a revised infrastructure statement for the American Mineralogical Society. And in that context, I've noted just how, you know, there's differing levels of ability of writing amongst very, very accomplished people. And it makes a huge difference when somebody can come along and like take all these great thoughts and put them into a format that actually has more, makes more sense and it reads better. If you haven't taken public speaking, you need to take public speaking, not because necessarily public speaking is something you'll do a whole lot of, but that kind of interpersonal interaction that is sort of the things that come from that foundation is huge. So Dale Carnegie, Toastmasters, all those things are something I highly, highly recommend. If you don't know how to program, you need to learn how to program. You really, really need to learn how to program. It is, the world has changed. Mm-hmm. It has utterly changed. And let me give you one short story. I was telling Joshua this example. A couple years ago, he's a full professor of computer science over at Harvard, resigned his position and went to go work with Google. And he's like a senior software engineer or whatever there. And in his blog, which is that he had, he was describing his decision. He said it was a really hard decision. But at the end of the day, he felt that he could have more impact at Google than he could have at Harvard. Now just think about that in terms of, let me see, Harvard, 375 years, one of the preeminent institutions in the entire world for higher education, and your impact there is less than working at this particular, you know, corporation. And you know, he's not like a, you know, high up guy or whatever in terms of, like, you know, he's not like a Larry Page or something like that, right? He's an engineer there. But that's what has happened in the world. The world has really, really changed, and computation is a huge thing. Final thing, book recommendation. I've listened to it, audiobook recently. Highly recommend it. Designing Your Life by Bill Burnett, Dale Evans. Bill Burnett is executive director of the D School or Design School at Stanford, and Dave Evans is also at the D School and is one of the co-founders, early employees of Electronic Arts, for any of you gamers out there. And the book is sold as applying product design principles to life design, so designing your career, path like that. And that's a fine pitch, right? So product design principles such as brainstorming, prototyping, things like that. But the thing that I think is really effective about the book, and it has its pitfalls, for instance, they don't, you know, obviously for believers, asking the question, well, what does God want me to do, as opposed to merely what do I want to do, is obviously not something that was covered in the book a whole lot, a little tiny bit. But the thing that I think makes it really effective is they address the question of, I have no idea what I want to do. I'm stuck. Whether or not you're early in your career or you're late in your career, how do you figure out the alternatives? Really great advice on that. And secondly, really great advice on networking. Because most folks, when we think about networking, we think about it's either schmoozing or it's going up to someone and saying, I need you to help me in this way. And you know, there's some folks who will run networking that way. But the way that they describe networking and give you exactly the words to say to do it in a way that's helpful to you, that's what I think makes it really useful. It isn't just, oh, okay, go network, do informational interviews, get a lot of information. But you need to say this and this and this and this to the person.
Otherwise, they will think this if you don't. But at this point in the conversation, if they say this, then you need to say this, this, and this. And, you know, they write out the words for you. That kind of thing is really helpful for a person like me because I benefit from that kind of stuff. Okay, so that's it.
Cool.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Let's go on to it.
Well, I think Dr. Lin covered everything. I was like, is there anything else to add? My background's a little bit different. Obviously, I'm earlier in my career than he is. I did my bachelor's in chemistry, but the irony with that is I actually in high school dropped out of chem. So I took 2 days of chemistry and was like, okay, I have no clue what they're talking about. Got to college, avoided it my freshman year. And then by sophomore, I had to take it. And I was like, oh, I love this. So for me, it was like, okay, I don't know what happened. But it became this huge puzzle for me where I was like, I love science. I love figuring things out. And it's beautiful. Yeah. So from that point on, my parents were like, what are you doing with your life? They had no clue what I was going to do with chemistry. So they had a pastor talk to me and everything. That's a whole different story. I'm not even kidding. Like,
cast out
scenario.
Chemistry.
Yeah, like, what's she going to do with this? Okay, but... So I went to, I got my master's at Georgia Tech, and then I went to UF to get my PhD, and now I'm teaching at Gordon College, which is a totally different experience for me because I've been in secular institutions my whole life. So it's like, what is this? It's different, okay? So in general for me, it's been a roller coaster. It's been one of those like, whoa, just the dynamics of secular versus Christian versus being in a role of being a student and then switching to, oh, now I'm the professor and I'm trying to help students, like figure out what they want to do and move forward, et cetera. Everything you said was so valid, like in all honesty. One of the battles I'm having with a lot of my students is writing skills and them not realizing how important it is for you to be able to communicate, not only in presentation style, but also in how you write. So that's something that they hate that I make them do journal style lab reports. They hate it. Like, so there's all this rebellion in that sense, because in a Christian institution, there's an expectation for grace. And I'm like, I hear you, but I want you to be prepared for what's beyond the school. So that's kind of been one of my experiences in terms of, so do take writing seriously because it is extremely important. Aside from that, one of the things I did learn just going through my graduate career, et cetera, was being open to experiences and people in general. It's really hard because when you have a plan that's set before you and you think this is exactly what I want to do and you see that it's not going quite the way you want, the tendency is to shut down and feel like everything's falling apart, right? And we're called to trust God, but I'll be honest, there are many points in my graduate career where I was not fully trusting him. I was like, what's happening? Like, this is what I want to do, but it's not working out. So I've had to switch advisors. I didn't have that perfect match, like he said, initially. And then when I found the perfect match, I grew exponentially under her guidance as an advisor. So yes, I do think your advisor relationship is extremely important. So for me, I'm more of the, please don't micromanage me. I really do want to have my own independence to some degree, but I want to be able to have advice from you as well. So one of the key things I would say is knowing who you are as a person. Some people know that they're slackers, or they have a tendency to just kind of say, oh, I have freedom, so they won't get work done. So maybe you do need someone who's a little more, they'll hold you to accountability, right? They'll say, hey, you have to present every couple of weeks to the group, you know, things like that. But other people, you do thrive being independent, so you know your, so knowing yourself is really important, I think, and just knowing who you're going to match well with. And this kind of ties into how I ended up with two advisors, because I was doing a research project with a medical school molecular biochemist as well as working in the chem department. And so I had that the molecular biochemist was more of the meet me at 7 a.m. every morning so I make sure you're here working. Like that was more of her style. She liked you to be there in the morning. So she would set up a meeting at 7 a.m. with you and you have to hop on the bus or do whatever and get there. And she'd stroll in and get her coffee, and oh, she's just happy that you're there because she knows once you're there, you're working. Meanwhile, my other advisor was very hands-off and trusted you. Like, she was like, as long as you're producing, she knew you weren't slacking off. She trusted you. So I had to learn how to balance between the two. Like, I had to juggle carefully. I will be honest, though, when it came time to graduating, I saw I was getting cornered with one of them. I went the other route. I kind of leaned on my chemistry advisor because I was like, all right, I'll use you for recs, I'll use you for this, I'll use you for that, because I'm getting out of here. So I just, you have to kind of learn how to play the game a little bit, in all honesty, to survive. Because, yes, some advisors do want to keep you a little bit longer, because you're free labor to some degree, right? So yeah, so I'll definitely say being open. In terms of relationally, I think throughout the career, throughout my graduate career, undergrads, et cetera, I noticed that people are important. They're kind of similar to them. There were points in my life where I was like, how can I relate with them? I'm Christian, we don't believe the same things. But some of my closest friends were people who were non-believers, right? And even aside from that, I remember there was this girl that I could not stand because she just seemed mean. But then towards the end of it, she became a really close friend of mine, right? And but I had to, like, God definitely convicted me at one point. It's like, I love her, no matter what you think about her personality. And then I actually saw better aspects of her. So being open to people is really important. Because you have no clue what they have to offer you. You have no clue what you can learn from them. And so it does take some level of you also checking yourself and not, you know, you might think you have all the answers and maybe you think you're humble, but sometimes you do need to be humbled to realize that, oh yeah, okay, I'm not better than you because I have a moral system or whatever. I really do have something I can learn from you, right? And in terms of when I don't know, so me and my boss were talking about this, the chair of the department, he phrased this perfectly, and so I just want to share what he said and just do it verbatim. His advice, if he was going to be here, and I totally agree with him, was the main things are to put yourself out there as much as possible, volunteer for committees, help your colleagues while accepting their help, and get into your professional societies, all while remembering that the sensation that you have of drowning is not real and will eventually stop.
And when does that stop? That was my next question. Because it hasn't yet.
That was my next question to him. I was like, when? You know, but in all honesty, I totally agree with him. Right, even before I was done with grad school, I was asked to be on the Committee for Inclusion and Diversity for a Biophysical Society. And I was like, whoa, these are all like super professionals. I have no clue how I'm going to fit in this committee. But I've been there, and they've asked me to renew again for the next 3 years, right? And so I've learned so much just serving on that committee. It's been really great for my career, just meeting people and learning how committees work. And just all the background things they do within the Biophysical Society. So that's something that I honestly would have never said, oh, I can do this. But being given that opportunity and saying, sure, I'll take it, it's shown me a lot, and I've learned a lot doing that. And so just being active in that, it opens other doors, because I also help with judgings for different application processes, so I get to see exactly how that works and how they discuss candidates, et cetera, et cetera. So I've learned a lot just doing that. So I definitely agree with his advice in terms of just putting yourself out there and being willing to participate in different societies, et cetera. So I don't know. And yes, there is this overwhelming sensation of there's so much to do all the time. But somehow you make it through. And I'm grateful for where I am today. And I still have way more to learn and way, who knows where I'll end up, like you said, right? Your career path, you might think you're going this trajectory and then it kind of changes. But being open to that, I think, is very important, and allowing God to, like, kind of lead you through that.
Cool. Thank you so much. We'll take about 5 more minutes to wrap this panel up while people are coming in, because what we found in the morning was it took people a while to walk from the last place, and then we'll launch into the next panel with Catherine Hayhoe, Leslie Whitman, and Stephen Mosher. So, Josiah, if you could...
Cool. Yeah, my name's Josiah Lewis. I just finished my PhD in physics and space sciences at Washington University, and I'm a postdoc there now. Just a few months in. It's been great working with Hannah, and I'm grateful to the Emerging Scholars Network and ASA for various forms of support. So the two things I'm going to share, for you to be able to like translate them, if you want to apply them to yourself, like you probably need to know a little bit about me personally. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. I like to pick things that I am confident I could do perfectly. So things that feel low risk to me, and sometimes those are cool things that everybody's like, wow, way to go, you did amazing things. And I'm like, internally, I'm like, not really. I knew I could do this before I started, or I wouldn't have started it. graduate school didn't turn out to be one of those things. That was something that I knew I could do. It took me 7 years to finish my PhD. And there were seasons of doubting my vocation, seasons that still persist. There were seasons of discouragement, times when I would, you know, wake up in the morning already discouraged about what my day was going to be like and already ready to give up on work for the whole day. And there's been a lot of grace that God's shown me in that, but it has definitely been a hard road. On the other hand, I get positively bubbly about space sciences and sharing them and communicating them to people. For those of you who know me personally, like you've experienced me getting a little bit crazy, just having fun talking about science. And I have the ability to be patient in developing new experimental techniques for novel applications. And that's good because that's what my PhD ended up being about. So two things I'm going to talk about. I'm so happy. Like, thank you all so much. Like, I am benefiting so much from your thoughts and insights, and hopefully mine will complement well. The first thing I have to say is, like, ask for help, and not just professionally, if you want to flourish holistically. So I'm so glad that, like, there is discussion of, like, finding a good mentor and how important that is. I also found myself, like, not just as a needy graduate student, but one who didn't really want to admit that any of my needs were anything but professional, right? I also had physical needs that included, like, mental health and emotional, and I have had a huge resonance with imposter syndrome. And so I was also seeking spiritual guidance, looking for people to talk to me about, like, how to think about passion for my work, wisdom for how to treat my unbelieving colleagues. You may find that your professional mentors, whether this is graduate school or somewhere else where you're starting new, are also open to mentoring you in some of these other aspects of life. I think that's a really great thing. I've got the impression that if you have a good advisor, you'll be able to find out pretty quickly kind of what the ground rules are, what kinds of questions they want you to bring. My advisor had a really extreme open door policy. She responds crazily fast, even on weekends. Mm. Literally has an open door down the hall that I could walk in any time. She's never been like, come back later. And even when there's a lot going on. But I had to walk through that door. I don't think once in 7 years she came into my office and said, I just wanted to see how things were going. Mm-hmm. So you know that was a very specific thing for me. But she was very open for me to come in and just talk about life, talk about family, talk about how I was doing. But we don't share a faith in Christ, and so it was difficult to find that sort of mentorship there. And I've also found it difficult to find mentorship and trust people to talk to me about how I'm doing personally, who I know aren't following Jesus. Even if I could go to them for some really great emotional advice or just like how to survive grad school advice, I often don't want to trust, right? And honestly, I want to look like I have it all together and am a great physicist because, like we heard in some of the sessions this morning, it's really attractive to people if you are great at what you do. And I don't want to go admit to people, hey, I really feel like I'm doing a terrible job, and part of it's because I just feel awful about my work right now. And I found that often spiritual good happens because Christ showed up, not because I showed up. So a story to illustrate this. I have had an office mate who's a few years ahead of me in the program. Great guy and really fun to hang out with. But we were just acquaintances. We would travel to conferences together and hang out, but I didn't really open up much, and so our friendship never went anywhere. And a couple years ago, we were at a conference, and we took a day off from the conference and toured around the San Francisco Bay Area. So we'd walked a bunch. We were lying down in a park on the grass. It was great, and we're just thinking, right? And I'm thinking to myself, like, I really wish I could have spiritual conversations with this friend. And really feeling both the pressure to be sort of evangelistic and also the sense of, like, I know him well enough to know that that would be a really awkward thing for me to be like, so tell me about your spiritual life, right? And instead, I chose to share how I was doing and kind of shared with him at the same level that I was wishing he would share with me. And that and subsequent conversations led to him feeling a lot more comfortable just, like, pouring into my life. And he's a few years ahead of me, so he became a peer mentor. And I would be like, Pierre, I'm dying. I don't know how to finish. And he's like, you'll make it. It's okay. It's going to stink, but, like, it'll be all right. And eventually there was also some of the spiritual connection that I wanted. There was one day after the Paris attacks, I guess that was last year, we spun our computer chairs in the lab and talked about evil and the problem of evil and are these people who are committing terrorist acts worse than us? And I got to talk about what I believe about human nature because I trust Jesus. And that was really amazing. And probably most importantly, I developed a lot of affection for this guy, not just because he was helping me out, but because I was getting to know him better and really appreciate him. Second, tips on how to cultivate good holistic mentoring relationships when you only have 24 hours a day and most of those are busy working. I feel overwhelmed sometimes because I get really good advice on a very long list of things that I should do and a very long list of relationships I should develop. And I'm a scientist, so I'm busy, and I'm also kind of an introvert, so I don't have a lot of energy to make friends and go socialize. So I often find it very difficult when that's added to perfectionism, because I want to go find a mentor and say yes to them about everything, participate in everything with them, follow them around in everything, and then I want a mentor for my professional life, and one for my spiritual life, and one for my intersection of professional and spiritual life. And you see how this goes, right? Pretty soon, I'm really, like, using more time than I possibly can and feeling guilty all the time because I don't know how to say no. So I'll share a story about some growth that I had in this area, and really the story is just to try to encourage other people in my boat that it is okay to say no. You don't have to find the perfect mentor. You can actually find mentors who are a really good fit for you in one aspect of life and follow them around about that and say no to other things. So near
after the story, we'll probably have to switch.
And that's where I'm done, so great. So near the end of my PhD, I was following around two mentors, two people, and was kind of, what do I do? Do I say no to one? Do I say yes to the other? And what I ended up doing was say no to some other responsibilities to make time to follow them both around, but said no to both of them sometimes. And one was really articulate on matters of science and faith, and a professional scientist I could follow in those areas, and a Christian who poured into me through the Spirit. And the other was also a Christian who poured into me through the Spirit, who was a campus minister, and helped me with the big picture and helped me rest sometimes. And I found that that worked, right? It was imperfect, and oftentimes I had to be creative to find time when they were available, and I was too. I mean, I followed them around to some things. I had to say no to some other social engagements so I could go to things they would be at. But I hope that'll be an encouragement to y'all. And yeah, that's it. The only other thing is mentoring is important, and this is maybe a great place to meet mentors. So I'd love it if people would come talk to me, partly because I'd probably get a lot from talking to you too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Yeah. Awesome.